Welcome to Silence the Mind Cluck. I'm your host, Maria T. Finch, and I'm super glad that you're here. Get ready to quiet that mind and reap the rewards.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. I'm Maria Finch. I'm an inner intelligence coach, and I am thrilled to have Joe Vandekart. How do you say your last name? Is that right? Vandekart?
That's it. Yep.
All right. I'm thrilled to have Joe with me. Welcome, Joe.
Hi, Maria. Pleasure to meet you.
Great to meet you. So to start out with, tell us a bit about you.
Yeah, I'm writing a book about our inner voices. So that's how I came across your podcast. Very excited to talk about this today. Yeah. A former naval officer and former Apple employee. And yeah, really just excited to be here.
All right, great. What an interesting background.
Yes, plays into the story.
All right, cool. So to start out with, tell us about a time in your life when you faced really major mind cluck.
Yeah. Like I said, I've listened to your podcast a little bit. I think a lot of people say this. It's constant, right? But a big one is, back in 2021, in the midst of the pandemic, and I was kind of at the top of my career at Apple, I just was just beating myself up, right? So I was having a really successful time. I was getting promoted. I was successful in my project. And just every day it was, you know, the mind cluck was, oh, you're not enough. You're not doing it enough. You're a fraud. They're going to find you out. You know, it's just that exhaustive, you know, you come home and just beat yourself up. So that was a huge time in my life of working through mind cluck.
Yeah. And well, I think so many people can relate to that because I think, especially when anyone is really trying to climb in a job or, you know, looking for that promotion or whatever, like our voices beat us back, our inner voices beat us back. So at that time, what were some of the techniques that you used to start quieting those voices down?
Yeah, I wish I could say that I was that intentional back then.
Oh, okay. That's okay. It doesn't have to be intentional.
Yeah. So unfortunately, during the worst of it, I found I was self-medicating, you know, drinking wine at the end of the day or finding other ways to, you know, go about numbing that incessant self-doubt and incessant anxiety. So that did not help the situation at all. In fact, I think it perpetrated, it kind of fed the mind cluck. And what I found is after a while that was just not sustainable. And so I, you know, ended up fighting with my partner a lot and it was just not a great time. And thankfully I came across, a book that, talked about the importance of journaling and self-reflection. And I thought, well, I have nothing else to lose. Why not give journaling a try? And the author made it sound very simple, like just do one page a day. You can write about anything, write about the color of your desk. It doesn't matter. And I started doing that. And I think that's that was the change time. That was when I started to notice the difference, in how I approached my mind cluck.
That's really good. That's really interesting because, so first thing I wanted to touch on is what made you recognize that like having drinks at the end of the day wasn't serving you well? Like how did, cause I think it's so common for people to be like, you know what? I'm just going to have another glass of wine because then I feel a little better and my head shuts up. And so yeah. What made you make that switch?
I think it was when I just realized that nothing was getting better, right? That old cliche of, you know, the definition of insanity is doing things over and over again and getting a different, you know, expecting different results. And it was really after months of, you know, why am I tired? Why am I cranky? Why am I anxious? Like, all the time. I realized that whatever I was doing, whether it was the drinking or whether it was, you know, just any other distractions, social medias and stuff like that. Sure. I just realized that what I doing wasn't working. You know, working harder at work wasn't working, you know, working less wasn't working. So
for our audience, this is like a really key point is that if what you're doing to try and feel better isn't working, then perhaps you want to take another look at it.
And I would look at it over the long run, right? Like, because you're right. As soon as I had that first glass of wine, my night was instantly better.
Of course.
But the next morning, I was exhausted, right? And then your chemicals are out of whack and your anxiety is just raging. So taking
Right.
note of
And
that.
you also, you don't sleep as well when you
Yeah.
drink.
Oh,
And
yeah.
yeah, there's all these things. I mean, it's so easy to reach for the glass of wine in the moment, and then the next day you're like, why did I do that?
Yes. And
Yeah.
then you forget by the time 5 o'clock comes back around, you're like, oh, it's time for
Right.
another glass of wine.
Right. Especially when your days are really intense and it's like you come home and you just think, oh, goodness. Well, so now going into journaling, I have always found writing to be really, really helpful. And for any of our listeners, I now offer a journal prompt every Tuesday on social
Oh, very
media.
nice.
So, because part of getting into the habit of writing is you might be like, well, what am I going to write about? And like Joe said, you can write about absolutely anything. So would you just do stream of consciousness, or how did you start that?
Yeah, in the very beginning, I did stream of consciousness because, like you said, I didn't know where to start, right? I couldn't label my emotions very well. I wasn't tying together cause and effect very well. And so it just helped to set aside the time initially. It was 20 minutes in the morning. I made myself sit down and put pen to paper. And that's really how I started the process. Just set aside that the time.
Yeah, it's so smart because there are a number of things that get accomplished. So, number one, I think writing, I mean, I argue that it's better if you're handwriting because the physical action takes more time than people who can type really fast. But I actually don't think it matters. I think you can do either. But when you just even give yourself that time, and it doesn't even have to be 20 minutes, like you could start with 5 minutes or start with 10 minutes, but just it's like just carving out that time slows your mind down so that you start to become more aware and more mindful of what you're writing.
And the other thing, yeah, you're so true. And I think I did 20 minutes because there was a point, it was just a little bit of a challenge to fill the time, right? Like I could fill out a page in 10 minutes, but it was just rushing through and not being very intentional. But I found that as I slowed down and started being truthful with myself, like, well, what am I feeling this morning? And it's like, well, I'm feeling rushed. And then you're like, but why am I feeling rushed? And it's like, oh, I overslept or I didn't prioritize this. That kind of helps, start thinking on these things. And I think over time, you start to just shift your behavior to accomplish what you were setting out to do in the first place.
Yeah, it's so true because when we write down things like that, so it's like if you ask yourself how you feel and you respond honestly, and I think part of that is actually taking a moment to like take a deep breath and like think about it deep inside, like think about it in your gut so that you're being truly honest. And then when you look at it, you can start to understand patterns. So you can be like, oh gosh, I feel like I'm rushed every morning. What's that about? And then, like you said, you can solve it.
And I think for some people, I was among them. Writing, I now find it very therapeutic. I'm writing a book, and it's a challenge. It's exciting to tease apart these ideas and force your brain to put them on paper. But in the beginning, there was that even that the mind cluck was, well, what you have to say isn't that important. Why is it worth writing down, right? And so there's hurdles to overcome every step of the way when you have this huge inner voice.
Yeah, so true. That's so true. So what enabled you to kind of connect with that inner voice and be like, no, what I'm going to write down really is important?
It's funny you say connect with it. I actually found by stepping back and looking at it like a stranger in my head, not like a weird, like you're hearing your voices, but
No, I know what you mean.
like this inner voice has a personality, right? It has a
Absolutely.
narrative that it fits back to me on the regular. And so I started approaching that like a stranger to be like, why do I think this way? And journaling really helped with that because I could explore one idea at a time. So it's like, why do I feel, when my boss would send me an email, my first response was always like, it flooded me with fear, even though I've never been yelled at work, right? Even though I've never been disciplined, it's like I had this huge reaction to it. And so being able to approach my mind, my inner voice with that kind of like metaphor of like, it's a stranger and I got to get to know it. I have to understand what's going on with it.
I think that's really wise. And I think one of the things that I think is really interesting about our internal dialogues is that I believe everybody has multiple different characters in there. This is not, this is not personality disorder. This is simply like you tap into different parts of yourself. So you've got like an inner critic, an inner parent. Hopefully you also have an inner cheerleader and the, you know, get stuff done person, etc. But it's like as you start to get to know these parts of yourself. And I like how you said, you know, as if you're getting to know a stranger, like that becomes very powerful.
And when you, it's so funny you talk about that cast of characters. I was thinking, when I decided to leave Apple at the end of 2021, it was a huge decision. I didn't go out with a game plan. And it was like the TED Talk of inner voices. It was like everybody took center stage. The critic had their hour. The cheerleader had their hour, you know, and it was just a cacophony of voices. And it's hard to sort through that when you're making a big transition in life.
It really is. So how did you manage that? Because I can totally imagine the kinds of characters that would get involved when you're making such a dramatic shift. And especially like you're on a career path, you're doing really well, and you choose to be like, nope, this isn't for me. So how did you calm yourself in all of that?
Initially, probably not very well. I felt like I gave center stage to the critic and the fear monger for sure. But then I rechanneled that energy. I did the same approach of, and it really goes into the book. It's called Anxiously Fearless is the title of the book. And it's about managing this tension in your brain, right? Like you're going to have these anxieties and you're going to have these inner critics and these inner thoughts. But for high achieving people, you still want to move forward, right? And so you can't always leave them behind. In fact, I would love to find somebody who's able to leave them behind. But you can get to know them and you can get to work with them. And so I started doing that. I got really interested. My undergrad was in neuroscience. And so I kind of fell back to that idea of like, you know, maybe if I understand what's going on physically in our brain, it will help me understand how my inner voices are communicating to me. And that has been a huge help in sussing out what they're trying to do. Because each one has a purpose, right? The critic isn't there to tear you down. It's trying to protect you.
Right.
And it's using historical data. It's using that time that you were yelled at as a child that you've probably forgotten about. You know, it wants you to not be yelled at again. And so when you see an authority figure, it kind of like shies away. Like that kind of stuff has really helped put into perspective what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I think that's so interesting. I've done a lot of work like this myself. And the other thing that's really great about the brain is that you can carve new neural pathways.
Yeah.
So it may be that in the past, your inner critic would be saying, you know, oh, this is going to be really bad and you don't want to do this, but you can shift it. So you can say, okay, we know that in this situation. So when we were a kid in this situation, we weren't safe. We might've gotten in trouble or, you know, who knows. But now we're adults. And so we can be in this situation and we can take a deep breath and we can choose to engage or not, and we can go on. And then the more you exercise that, the stronger it becomes, so that the child fear part actually, you know, stays off to the side most of the time. Not that they won't come up from time to time, but they're less likely to. Is that also work that you have done?
That's exactly what I'm writing about. So chapter one is about self-awareness, in as much that you have to be aware that you have these voices, that they're running on these scripts, you know, that you didn't consciously build, but you can consciously build new scripts or retrain your inner voice. And so, you know, when that inner critic comes back up with the example of like, oh, remember, you don't want to get yelled at, like you recognize it for what it is because you've taken the time to get to know it. And so self-awareness is a huge part on that journey.
Yeah. And it's so powerful because when you first start to recognize these things and you go, oh, you know what? Like my stomach doesn't have to clench because the likelihood that anyone's going to yell at me as an adult is pretty much zero. So let's rewire this, you know, let's rewire this and be like, okay, I feel calm. I might be thinking in my head, gosh, this person is a jerk, or, you know, they woke up on the wrong side of the bed this morning, but it doesn't make my stomach clench and, you know, start the cacophony of voices that make you feel bad.
Yeah. When you learn that you don't have to internalize, especially when dealing with other people, you don't have to internalize their behavior because it's not, your survival is no longer dependent on that, right? Or
Yes.
you can just retrain your mind to take it. And it's with new situations too. I like to put myself outside my comfort zone a lot, and do, things that I haven't done before. And that comes with a lot of self-doubt and a lot of like beating yourself up, but that's where you grow. And so if you let these
Yeah.
voices overtake you, you don't, you kind of miss that opportunity. And so that's what I
Yeah.
want to work on. It's helping people understand that it's okay to feel these things. It's
Right.
also okay to retrain your own voice, right? To help you along.
Yeah, one of the things that I work on a lot myself, and I really, one of these days, I really hope that the Dalai Lama hears my podcast and wants to be on it, because he's the
The
one I would
dream.
like to ask, like, who's in your head? if anybody, because he's what, he's the 14th Dalai Lama, so he's done this a lot. But in any case,
Yeah, no, that's a great point though.
yeah, I mean,
Like,
because I think that I think it doesn't matter. Like, I think this is part of the human condition. And so being able to work with what you have and rewrite those scripts and really work on those scripts is really important. But one of the things that I was going to say is so, I mean, we all have good days, bad days, whatever. And now what I'm really trying to do on my bad days is to be like, okay, like what do I get to learn from this? Not, I don't like the Pollyanna-ish thing of like, oh, everything happens for a reason and this is going to make you a better person, whatever. I'm like, no, I don't agree with that. Like, sometimes life sucks and that's just a fact.
And sometimes there is no rhyme or reason. It just,
yeah, exactly. But what I do pay attention to is if I'm having a bad day or bad moment, whatever, is to be like, okay, number one, what voice is loudest in my mind? And number two, what are they trying to tell me? Like, what is the fear, belief, et cetera, that they're operating from? Because you have to first understand the script to be able to rewrite the script.
100%. Clap for that. Like, and so that's the remaining chapters I go through. Like, I agree with you 100%, Maria. It's the understanding maybe the negative script that you're reacting to, and teasing that out, and then replacing it. This is the most important part. Replacing it with, I don't want to say positive, because I, there's so much, they call it toxic
Yeah,
positivity, but like
totally.
a beneficial script. Something that serves
Right.
you, right? Because excessive worry and excessive doubt, excessive criticism doesn't serve us. And so putting in a beneficial script in there, I think, is a great goal for people. And something that I continuously work on for those bad days, because they will come.
Yeah. And I think so. I totally agree with you about toxic positivity. That's something I talk about a lot because it drives me insane and I do not believe in toxic positivity.
Drives me crazy.
But I think that when you're looking to just say to rewire something in your mind, that you make sure it's something that actually resonates with you. So you could read something and be like, oh, okay, I'm gonna go with this particular line. So I'm trying to think of a good example of like, I believe that I can handle whatever is before me or something like that. Hopefully you do believe that, and hopefully that is something you can wire into yourself. But whatever belief you might come up with, you've got to make sure it really resonates with you. And it can take some wordsmithing and some practice to be like, is this really what I want to believe? Like, can I make this stronger? Can I make this more true to me? Because in my experience, if it doesn't resonate with you, then it's a lot harder to rewire.
100%. And I think to add on to that, wordsmithing is important, or like, because I think it helps you understand the intent and the meaning behind the new script that you're putting in. But I think we also want to make sure that we're not numbing ourselves in just a different way. And I think that's kind of what toxic positivity does, though. It, right? It doesn't let us feel the emotion. It doesn't let us become aware of our reaction. And it's just another numbing agent. And those numbing agents wear off quickly.
That's so
Where I
true.
think, yeah, I think what you and I are talking about is getting to the root of the problem, right? Like
Yeah.
getting to it and understanding where these thoughts are growing from and addressing it there.
Because that's where you really become empowered. It's easy to put band-aids on. And
Yes.
sometimes that's really valuable. So sometimes you need an, so say you're going into a stressful meeting and your brain is going bananas and you need something to shut it down in the moment. So there's a bazillion different exercises you can do to shut it down in the moment. But then to go back and be like, okay, what was really going on there so that you get to the root of it so that it won't keep happening?
And I think that's important to make your you hit on a good point where it is, in the moment, it's always good to have an exercise that you can walk through. But if your goal is to live a calmer, more fulfilled, peaceful life, it's super important to go back and reflect. Reflection is
It is.
huge. And asking, what led to this? How did I react? How do I want to react?
Yeah.
And then seeing where the discrepancies are there. I think that helps a lot in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing that I think can be helpful is you can start to pay attention to anytime any emotion that you have is dialed up. So you're feeling intensely angry, intensely frustrated, intensely sad, whatever. That's when you start to notice, like, okay, something's going on here. I'm a big believer in expressing emotion because there's so much power in that release. Do you subscribe to that as well?
I have found depends on how you mean expressing. Did you mean like screaming
Oh,
into a pillow
I can,
sometimes?
yeah, like scream into a pillow, punch a pillow, throw water balloons at a wall. You can, I mean, one thing that I think is kind of fun to do, you can try this sometime, is you can write out everything you're mad about on a piece of paper and then crumple it up. And if you have a car, run it over.
Yes, very symbolic. I love that.
So you can make it fun, you can make it creative. So it's like, get this out of me and let's, like move on from this. Because I think it's, in my experience, if you don't get that energy out, it makes it harder to tune in.
I completely agree, especially if you're feeling it, right? If it's a visceral feeling in your body, it's getting that out is great. I find labeling is probably the most therapeutic for me, like acknowledging that the
Okay.
emotion exists. Because in a way, and maybe this is my upbringing, I grew up in Michigan, very, nice Midwesterner, and you just don't express emotions in that way. And
Yeah,
so
okay.
sometimes that can make me uncomfortable, but I find if I do address it, if I label it, and I identify it properly, then like I know if I'm mad, I'm not going to be able to sit down and write, right? So I should probably go to the gym, right? It's not, it's like that awareness helps me optimize the expression in that way, is being able to just label the emotion.
Right, that makes so much sense. And you can really just, for our audience, you can think of it as energy. So you're feeling some intense emotion, whatever the range of emotion it is, it's energy that you need to move. And so if you make yourself physically active, if you do one of these techniques, screaming into a pillow, whatever, like there's a whole bunch of different ways to approach it. But really what you're doing is you're letting go of energy so that you can calm down and be like, okay, what's really going on here?
100%. And it is so powerful when you, I think when you're able to, I don't want to say master, it's a little too strong, combative of a word, but when you're able to redirect or control your emotions in that way, you find that you lash out less. You're not as, bitter or angry with people. And it really helps your day, I think, when you're able to just exercise that level of control.
Yeah, well, and I also think of it as it's really important to recognize when you're in an interaction with someone, because that's when you might want to step away. You might want to say, you know what? Now is not the right time to have this conversation because I'm at a 10 and I need to be at least at a 5 before I can continue talking. And just having that awareness can make you have fewer complicated interactions because you'll be able to go into an interaction with some calm as opposed to going in there with guns blazing.
And that's a great, I mean, that's a feedback cycle to yourself, right? Your mind clock, if you don't lose control in your interactions with others, then you're not ruminating on it, you know, the right. next day where you're like, oh, I embarrassed myself, or now this person thinks this of me, or I look, you know, and yeah, that's a huge help when you don't embarrass yourself.
Yeah, because it becomes a perpetuating cycle, right? Yeah. And I mean, of course, all of us can be in a situation and react. Like that's also part yeah. of the human condition. But it's like, the more you start to pay attention to that, the easier it becomes to be like, oh, nope, you know what? I don't want to have this conversation right now. Like, I'm going to take a minute and I'll get back to you, or let's switch to email or whatever. You know, you just take all that energy out of it. Because really what it is like you're coming in with this huge wave of energy.
They call it guns blazing for a reason, right? Like it's kind of a violent force of energy. Like you definitely want to cool that down and just regain that. It's that composure. I think I hesitate to have people think, like you were kind of alluding to, we're not suppressing anything. It's more, does this interaction, does this reaction serve me, right? I'm responsible for my reactions. No matter what I'm feeling, I'm responsible for my reactions. And the person I'm engaging with is responsible for their actions. And so I want to control, you know, I want to keep that power with me and not just let it all out, kind of thing. And that's how I have found it helped me to be self-aware and to figure out when something's serving me, when it's not.
Yeah. And then as you start to tune into this and you get better at being like, oh, okay, I can be in this situation and I don't need to react. Then you get to be like an anthropologist and you get to watch the other person and be like, oh, you know what? They actually need to take a minute too.
Yeah. I was telling, I think on another podcast, I was talking about this. So when some people think about turning inwards and self-awareness, they get this really icky, like, oh, it's a very selfish feeling. And I actually think it makes you a better human for other humans because you see commonalities between each other, right? Like I can see the humanity in myself when I get nervous and angry and I react and I lash out, right? And as you said, you start to become aware of this and maybe I stop lashing out in certain situations, but now I recognize it in a coworker. That they're actually having a very similar reaction. And I don't have to do anything with that information, but it does help you empathize and it helps you relate.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very powerful.
It is, because compassion is such a powerful thing to feel. And I have found, just as an example, I was in the grocery store, I was at self-checkout, and this woman had trouble with her checkout thing, and the guy came to help her, but he wasn't able to fix it immediately, and she just like flipped out and, you know, said something very rude and kind of grabbed her stuff, and the guy looked at me, and he's like, it just takes a minute for the thing to rewind. And I said, oh, you know, I understand. I said, you tried to help her. It's okay. So in that setting, like instead of being like, oh, this is a terrible supermarket and this guy doesn't know what he's doing, it's like I could just take a deep breath and be like, oh gosh, that must have felt awful for him. And I, you know, I understand her frustration, but gosh, she must be having a bad day. And so you can apply it in situations like that, because otherwise you can pick up on this, you know, just kind of angry, negative energy that's around all of us all the time. And then it can feed you in some way and it can make your trigger faster as opposed to like, oh gosh, what's happening here? Let's show compassion in this situation.
Yeah. I heard another interesting conversation similar to that. Yeah. When you internalize other people's negativity and you feel almost rightly justified in being like, oh, well, they shouldn't have done that. It's like, you can argue the merits of that, but you're actually taking that on yourself. And it's, I think for the mind cluck perspective, it's just best not to ingest that. Like,
yeah,
you should be compassionate and empathize with people.
Yeah. To the best of your ability. Of course, we're all human.
To the best of your ability.
We all have our moments.
I'll admit. That might be the last thing. Oh, go ahead. I was going to say that might be the last thing I had. Is like, when you approach your inner voice as a stranger, be kind, right? It is your inner voice. So it's like, especially if your inner voice, I have a very critical one, you know, things that I would never say to another human being, I say to myself, kind of thing, right? And so just approaching it and being like, I hear you, you're not correct, like, but I want to get to know you. I think it makes it fun, and you can be kind and like the same empathy that we're talking about showing other people, show to yourself.
That's so important. And I think, especially with all of the characters that we all have inside, think of it as like, gosh, aren't they fascinating? And what has this character, like, what's been their struggle and how can I ease their struggle? Because that's part of the rewiring is actually being like, oh, I love this character who's been trying to protect me and who has my best interests at heart. And now I want to give them a slightly different job. So instead of coming in with their hammer, I want them to come in and be like, oh, you know what? You can do this. Like you give them a new script.
Exactly. And it's an appreciation of how beautiful our brains are, right? I mean,
Yeah.
the characters we're talking about are the result of trillions of computations that we have no access to,
Right.
and it's a gorgeous thing, but we can influence it. And I think that's the beautiful part.
Yeah. Well, oh my gosh, we flew through our time. And so I want to just, yeah, this is such a fun conversation. But I wanted to give you an opportunity. Like, what last things would you like to tell our audience about? Please go ahead.
Yeah, Marianne, this was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Like I told the audience, I'm currently writing a book called Anxiously Fearless. It'll be out in May of 2023. And if you want more information, you can go to my website, which is jvandekar.com.
Okay, wonderful. And we will have all of this information in the show notes for everyone. So you'll be able to connect with Joe and get his wonderful book.
I appreciate it. Thank you again so much.
All right. Thank you, Joe. Thanks for being here. I'm really grateful for all that you shared today. And to our audience, thanks so much for listening. Thanks for listening. If you found this content helpful, please like, comment, and share across your social media. Are you sick of mind clucking up your days? Book a free initial consult with me at mindcluck.com and let's silence it. Thanks and have a great week.